This is
KUT.
KUT, Austin.
Stop.
This is KUT Weekend for the second weekend of November 2018. Thank you for listening. I'm Nathan Bernier with KUT 90.5, the NPR station in Austin, Texas. Here's what we got for you this week. Down ballot election results you may have missed.
The big news from the school board races is that District 1 incumbent Ted Gordon was unseated.
Austin urbanists see support for denser housing in the election results.
And there is a certain urgency to that, that we don't want necessarily to have long waiting periods built into the process.
And Austin's efforts to feed an outsized migration of monarch butterflies will be tested this fall.
This year is going to represent as many monarchs as we can produce with the current amount of milkweed and the absence of weather disasters.
Those stories and more in this edition of KUT Weekend.
God bless Texas!
You probably heard about that race and maybe about this guy saying this.
So f***ing proud of you guys!
Yeah, that was aired live without the bleep on stations all over Texas and across the country. But it was late at night. It's like 11:30. Of course, there was this dude.
It is time for all of us to unite under the best banner of them all, and that is the great flag of the Lone Star State, the Texas flag.
So I won't waste time telling you about all those races at the top of the ballot. You probably know what happened. But hey, we lead busy lives, and many of us don't always have the time to follow every single contest down the ballot. If you know them all, I salute you. You are an informed citizen, and we're going to have something for you in a bit. But first, let's just hear about who won seats on the government agency that accounts for more than half of local property tax bills, the Austin Independent School District. There was a bit of a shock result on Tuesday night. There will be three new members on AISD's Board of Trustees. KUT's Claire McInerney reports on the results from Election Day.
The big news from the school board races is that District 1 incumbent Ted Gordon was unseated by newcomer Letitia Anderson. District 1 covers much of East Austin. During his time on the board, Gordon advocated for improving conditions and outcomes for kids in the district. Letitia is a caregiver for the elderly and native Austinite. Kristen Ashy won the race for District 4, which represents Northwest Austin. She beats UT student Zach Price. The race for an at-large position, which was vacated by former board president Kendall Pace, will go to a runoff in December. Carmen Tilton had 40% of the votes, and Arthi Singh trailed with 36%. Claire McInerney, KUT News.
Austin voters approved a bond package totaling more than $925 million this week, as well as some other local propositions. KUT's Saida Hassan has that.
Voters approved all seven bond proposals on the ballot. That includes a record-setting $250 million affordable housing bond. There's also funding for parks, public safety, and transportation. More surprising was Austin voters' rejection of both citizen-initiated propositions. Prop J would have required any comprehensive rewrites of the land development code to go to a public vote. Austin Mayor Steve Adler says he was pleased with the results.
I think the community very clearly is saying they don't want to three-year delay before we start actually moving forward with significant changes. They want us to act now.
Voters also rejected Proposition K, which called for a third-party audit of the city government. Saida Hassan, KUT News.
Well, now let's get a little bit of analysis of what those local results mean. KUT's Audrey McGlinchey has this.
Former city council member Laura Morrison was widely considered the biggest challenger to Austin Mayor Steve Adler. But on election night, Adler beat Morrison by a lot. He got 60% of the vote. She got a little less than 20%. Before the election, I went to a campaign fundraiser for Morrison. Musicians played, there was a buffet of food, and about 40 people in a back room at Threadgill's. When I talked to folks there about why they supported Morrison, I got roughly the same answer.
Laura is a supporter of neighborhoods. Neighborhoods are really threatened nowadays. You know, with Code Next, it would have been disastrous.
She really wants to help neighborhoods still be neighborhoods.
Well, Laura is definitely for the Austin community and for the neighborhoods and for smart growth and to maintain the integrity of the neighborhoods and to not just like bulldoze everything down.
That was Lori Weidlich, Rebecca Scheller, and Virginia Palmer. We heard similar talking points in the fight for Prop J. The prop failed. But if it had passed, it would have mandated that citizens vote on every comprehensive land development code rewrite. It also would have created a waiting period between when a new code is passed and when it goes into effect. But Prop J and Morrison were both defeated. That surprised some people.
I had seen so much interest in Proposition J that I assumed that it would pass.
Chris Riley is a former Austin City Council member, and he identifies as an urbanist, someone who supports denser housing, a walkable city, and better public transit. He's typically not on the same side of issues as Morrison and Prop J supporters.
One twist that we have from the election is that, in particular, the community recognizes the need for comprehensive reform, and there is a certain urgency to that we don't want necessarily to have long waiting periods built into the process, that we need to get some of these problems addressed sooner rather than later.
But others just don't see a bigger picture in these local election results. Adler's win over Morrison was simply a product of cash, they told me.
He had the big money behind him, and it's very hard to fight big money.
Adler raised almost seven times as much money as Morrison. Patricia King is the incoming president of the Austin Neighborhoods Council. The group endorsed Morrison and supported Prop J. I asked King if the defeat of both on Tuesday made her reconsider the group's approach to growth in the city, if their preservationist stance was a loud but maybe small voice. No, she said.
We're planning to get together as a neighborhood and really protect our neighborhoods. You know, that fight is going to have to increase.
So it's a doubling down on
We're doubling
efforts.
Down. We're doubling down.
Adler may have won by a lot, but Prop J did not. It lost by only a 4-point margin.
To me, I would have expected margins closer aligned to what we saw in the mayoral campaign.
Angela DeOyos Hart is on the city's planning commission. She also worked on a campaign against Prop J.
And the fact that we didn't, to me, also reiterates the fact that there is a lot of passion and there are a lot of people that we still need to bring into the process.
DeOyos Hart says there needs to be better communication about why the city should write a new land code and why, in her mind, it needs to be done quickly. Which brings us to the future. Chris Riley, the former city council member, said now that he's starting to digest Tuesday's local election results.
The single biggest question I have that I've been trying to, and I was asking Tuesday night, and I'm still, the question I have is, does this mean we can't? So that's what.
Sorry, Chris, you literally went out there right before you asked the question.
Okay. That keeps happening. I don't know why. But that, no,
what
my
is question,
question is: does this mean does the result on Prop J mean we can't do incremental reform? And that is what I'm trying to figure out. I'm trying to figure out exactly what the path forward looks like.
There's been all this focus on comprehensive land code changes and if they're good or bad. That's what Prop J was all about. That's what Morrison made part of her campaign about, because that's what the city council's been talking about. But Riley says there are small changes we could be making now, and he doesn't think enough people are talking about that. Audrey McGlinchey, KUT News.
Even though the election was on Tuesday, some races in Texas are not quite over. Rebecca Allen is a reporter at the Austin Bureau of the Dallas Morning News, and she's been following these races. Hi, Rebecca.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Thank you. So let's go through some of these. We'll start with Dallas. There's a state house seat there that's being fought over.
Sure. In House District 108, Joanna Cadenash, the Democrat in the race on Tuesday night, was losing by 440 votes. Those results are unofficial. So she, like a few other Democrats and actually one Republican, are waiting for the provisional ballots, absentee, mail-in ballots, overseas ballots to come in and hopefully make the difference.
And then there's a couple in the Houston area where candidates are still waiting for those ballots to come in?
Sure. State Representative Dwayne Bohack was ahead by only 137 votes. So his Democratic challenger, Adam Milicinic, is also waiting to see if the provisional ballots and the absentee ballots make any difference. Also, Representative Mike Schofield. He's the Republican incumbent, and he fell short 49 votes to the Democrat challenger, Gina Colani. So he is on social media saying the results are not final yet. He said he talked to the Harris County clerk, and he said that there's plenty of absentee ballots and provisional ballots to be counted, so they're waiting, just like some of those other Democrats, to see what the final results are.
I can't believe how many close races there are. There's another one in Collin County. You have the incumbent Republican State Representative Matt Shaheen of Plano declaring victory over the Democrat Sharon Hirsch.
Sure, that one was only separated by 378 votes. So many of these races, they were within a less than a 1% margin, less than 1,000 votes, typically a couple hundred. And in some cases, like the Houston race, that's, you know, that was 49 votes.
Of course, there's the congressional race in West Texas, which has got a lot of attention. What's the latest there?
Well, that one will take a while. I mean, there are, you know, more than 1,000 precincts that they're waiting on. You're talking about more counties. They're saying that could take to the end of November.
Right. And that's Republican Will Hurd and Democrat Gina Ortiz Jones?
Yes.
So you said that one could take until the end of the month. What about these other races? How long will these candidates and incumbents have to wait to get a final official word?
You know, it's unclear right now, and it's going to depend county by county. I talked to Dallas County this morning, and, you know, they said that they're not even sure how many provisional and mail-in ballots are still out there, so we're still waiting on more information. I know a lot of these candidates are hoping that it's going to be soon. I talked to Adam Milicinic. He was saying, you know, that he was really hoping that this would have been decided by Tuesday night.
Right, because I guess legislators can start filing bills on Monday.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's a little painful for them.
All right. Rebecca Allen is a reporter at the Austin Bureau of the Dallas Morning News. You can read her story about this at dallasnews.com. Rebecca, thanks for talking to us.
Thanks so much.
Now that the election is behind us, we have a very important day with respect to the Texas legislature coming up on Monday. KUT's Ben Philpott is here to tell us about that. What's happening on Monday, Ben?
Yeah, now that we know who's going to be a part of the 2019 legislative session, who got reelected, who won for the very first time, we got to have the bills ready to go. So Monday is the first day of bill filing for the legislative session. Texas has a very truncated legislative calendar. It's 140 days every 2 years, so they don't waste any time. As long as you are going to be a member of the next legislative session, you can start filing some bills.
What are you going to be looking for when these bills are filed? Anything specific to watch out for?
There's not a lot that you can glean from the bills. Only 20% of bills filed in the legislative session ever get passed. So the majority of them don't even get a committee hearing. But when you're looking at the bills the first few days of bill filing, you're going to find a lot of campaign promises. If you ran on helping to fund schools, you're going to find maybe a teacher pay raise bill. If you're somebody who wanted taxes to be cut, you might find something on property taxes. A lot of these bills will get swept up into other major bills, or if you've got a more senior lawmaker that filed the bill on the same topic that a freshman lawmaker filed a bill on, well, the senior lawmaker is going to be the one allowed to carry this bill once it finally comes up.
So every bill that's filed gets a number, right? Is there anything, any significance to that?
You know, the one thing to think about, and we're not going to see this immediately, but the one thing to think about when looking at bills is how low is their number, especially if this is a bill that has a number between 1 and 20 or 1 and 30. These are bills that the leadership within the House and Senate have deemed as priorities, so they give them those super low numbers. Those numbers are set aside for the lieutenant governor and the speaker to dole out. So not immediately, again, those will be things that the leadership will think about over the next month or so. But once the session starts, look for those low number bills. Those are the priorities as we go through session.
Ben Philpott, KUT senior editor, thank you for your time.
Thank you.
The San Marcos City Council has voted unanimously to designate the city's first African-American church as a historic landmark. KUT's Dalia Jones has more.
The church was built in 1866 in a historically black neighborhood and served as the religious and social center for black people in San Marcos. It was burned down in 1876 by the KKK and took almost three decades to rebuild. The historical designation comes after San Marcos won a $150,000 preservation grant last month to restore the church, which has been vacant since 1986. Josie Folletta is with the city of San Marcos.
It's a really beautiful story because they've included the members of the original congregation in this conversation. They've included the Calaboose African American History Museum, which is directly across the street, in the conversation. So there's been a lot of community input and buy-in in the process, which is pretty amazing.
A private landowner bought the property last year and planned to scrap it. But after learning about its history, the landowner partnered with the city to preserve it. Dalia Jones, KUT News.
Open enrollment for the Affordable Care Act, or Obamacare as it's known, began last Thursday. And a local group that helps people sign up for health insurance plans says more people came to them in the first week of open enrollment than the same time last year. KUT's Ashley Lopez reports.
Corey Hattermer with Foundation Community says more than 1,000 people came to her group to sign up through healthcare.gov in the first week of open enrollment. Compared to the first week of enrollment last year, that's a 22% increase. Hattermer says it's a little surprising because the federal government has been spending less money lately on getting the word out about Obamacare enrollment.
With all the confusion around the Affordable Care Act out there right now, we were really worried that not as many people would come in this year. And the first week, we haven't actually seen that to be the case.
Hattermer says options and prices in the Obamacare marketplace are very similar to last year. She says a lot of people qualify for financial assistance, which brings down the out-of-pocket costs of insurance plans. It is also the only marketplace with required protections for people with pre-existing conditions. The six-week sign-up period through healthcare.gov runs until December 15th. Ashley Lopez, KUT News.
Former Congressman Steve Stockman is sentenced to 10 years on federal corruption charges. Andrew Schneider reports from Houston.
Stockman was convicted earlier this year of masterminding a scheme to divert more than $1 million in charitable contributions to pay for campaign and personal expenses. Under federal guidelines, he could have received up to 14 years. Instead, he got just 10. Judge Lee Rosenthal took the state of Stockman's health into account. The former congressman suffers from diabetes and related illnesses. In addition to prison time, the judge sentenced him to 3 years probation and ordered him to pay the full $1 million-plus in restitution. Stockman plans to appeal. In Houston, I'm Andrew Schneider.
Worst Fest ends its 10-day run on Sunday in New Braunfels. Brian Kirkpatrick reports it's not too late to go German for the weekend.
There is plenty of sausage, beer, and oompa music left to enjoy before the celebration of German heritage ends on the Worst Fest grounds near Landa Park. According to state history experts, 17% of Texans have full or partial German ancestry. Many Germans settled in the Texas Hill Country in the 1830s and 40s, and past Worst Fest president Dan Kruger thinks he knows why.
I think they discovered this area, one, because of the rivers, the easy hills, hill country area. It's just a absolute beautiful surroundings.
Maybe it was as close as they could get to the forest and mountains found back home. So lift a mug for Anhalt, Bergheim, Bernie, Fredericksburg, Green, and New Braunfels. Admission is $15 to Worst Fest. Parking fees vary, but you can take Uber and Lyft to the event. Both are sharing a drop-off and pickup area near the grounds. In San Antonio, I'm Brian Kirkpatrick.
All right, take your eyes off the phone this month and take a look around you. You might see some orange and black wings fluttering about. Monarch butterflies are making their way through Texas to Mexico for the winter. Austin is one of a string of communities that's rolled out the red carpet for these monarchs, with policies aimed at helping the butterflies along their way. And as KUT's Mose Bushell reports, this year will be a big test to see how much those efforts help.
Think of Austin as a rest stop for migrating monarchs. The same way you need to fill up the gas tank in your car, monarchs need to stop along their route. In the fall, it's to fill up on the nectar from certain flowers. In the spring, they need to lay their eggs on milkweed plants. Austin has policies to grow those plants on public land. It's one of a bunch of places along the butterfly's migration path that are trying to become like little islands of refuge for butterflies. Is it working? I sent KUT intern Elizabeth Euclid down to one of these oases to see.
Hello.
Hey, Elizabeth, it's Mose.
Hey, Mose, how's it going?
It's going all right. Are you rolling?
Yeah, right now I'm at the Zilker Botanical Garden, and they have a whole section dedicated just to butterflies. So there's lots of different flowers around here, and they even have a few different like dishes for the monarchs to get some nectar from.
They have dishes out?
Yeah, they actually have a butterfly feeder. And so they're hanging baskets and they're stocked with fruits to feed the butterflies. So I see a few of them in there right now eating some of the fruit.
This year, they might want to put a little extra fruit in the bowl. More monarchs are expected to fly through than any of the past 10 years. That's because of exceptionally nice weather up north, where monarchs lay their eggs on milkweed during the summer breeding season. Tiara Curry is a scientist with the Center for Biological Diversity. She says up to 180 million monarchs could fly through Texas this fall, twice the number from last year.
This year is going to represent as many monarchs as we can produce with the current amount of milkweed and the absence of weather disasters.
The thing is, even with the weather completely cooperating, monarch numbers are still well below the 225 million butterflies needed to stabilize the population. That's what makes this fall a true test of how much places like Austin can really help. Curry says it will show how well these little oases of food we've created can help sustain this generation of butterflies.
If the fall is the limiting factor for them in terms of finding high-quality forage plants and connected habitat to enhance their journey south, then we'll know by the number of monarchs that make it through the winter in Mexico, if nothing goes wrong there, how many monarchs we can produce in a fall is one of the primary limiting factors on the population.
If a lot of monarchs don't reach Mexico, we'll know they're not finding enough food on their way. If they do, conservationists can be more confident that pit stops like the one in Austin are helping. That's especially important because things are only expected to get worse for the monarchs weather-wise, says Chip Taylor. He's the director of a group called Monarch Watch at the University of Kansas.
By and large, what's going to happen is that we're not going to see these favorable conditions come together very often in the future. Maybe never. It depends on how fast things change out there.
The change he's talking about is climate change. It's expected to bring more weather like droughts, freezes, and wildfires all up and down the monarch's range that will further threaten them. It's a reason many conservationists like Tiara Curry would prefer to see the butterflies listed as an endangered species, with the protections that come along with that.
That sort of comprehensive look at what it takes to save them, I think, would be very beneficial to them, as opposed to cities here and there, campuses here and there. All of that is essential, but it would be awesome if there was a big coordinated response to save them.
The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service is set to decide on whether to list the monarchs as endangered next year. But given the Trump administration's record on conservation, Curry doesn't think it will. So monarch pit stops may be the next best thing, if not to restore the species, then at least to keep it on a kind of life support in the face of growing threats. Mose Bushell, KUT News.
That is KUT Weekend for the second weekend of November 2018. Thank you so much for listening. You can subscribe to this podcast at weekend.kut.org and email any questions or comments to weekend@kut.org or just ask me on Twitter. I'm at KUT Nathan. Our theme music is by RAC. Thank you so much for listening. I'm Nathan Bernier with KUT 90.5 and KUT.org. And then,